Welcome to Universal After Dark, a Universal podcast that's not the same as all the others. Hello and welcome to Universal After Dark. And joining me on this special episode is our Sinead.
Hello, hello.
Or as our silly used to say, our Sinead.
We're going to have a lot of laughs on here today, Sinead.
So, future Craig and Sinead are waving over to Diz After Dark Craig and Sinead. We're in the globe, they're in the mouse's head. We're waving. There you go. So we're doing this special episode, and I know nothing about this. So this is all going to be, it's just going to be me asking silly questions. But we've just done a special on the Dash Pass at Disney, but Universal do one as well, but it's called something else.
Yeah, so it's the Attraction Assistance Pass. I'm going to actually take photos of what it looks like, and I'll send it over to you so you've a visual as to what I'm talking about. But yeah, I really struggled to find any information about this because I think Universal have Express, and it's just a single payment. You can then go on everything. I feel like it's not as used as probably like the equivalent of the Dash Pass is, but it was difficult to try and find information about it ahead of time. I know I threw it into the group asking if anybody had used it, and I don't think anyone on the team had ever used it before.
I think I told you to book the Hard Rock and all your problems would go away.
Probably, but so would have been all the funds in my bank account, but here we are. A bit of background if you haven't listened to the Disney one yet. So about kind of 6-7 weeks before we went to Florida, I really badly herniated a disc in my back and was really struggling to stand, was really struggling to sit for long periods of time, kind of need to be keeping moving as much as possible. And as a result, queuing was going to be quite difficult. So the way you go about it with Universal, and Universal changed this only in the last, I want to say, month and a half. It's a fairly new process. So you can find all the information on the Universal website, and they link to everything that you need. And I believe Craig's going to remember to put all the links in the show notes.
In the show notes, yeah.
Yeah, so they work with this third party that's an international company called IBCCES, I think. It's a nice catchy name. Probably stands for something, but I can't remember what it stands for. So basically, you have to get approval from this international body to say that you require assistance. And they do ask for you to upload proof, which is different to Disney. Disney didn't ask me to show anything. Disney didn't ask me to prove anything. They just asked me to talk about why I would need assistance. And I know there's a whole thing in America of like, can't ask people about their medical conditions.
It's illegal and all that, so they say.
It's bizarre. So I don't know if that's why they go via this company, but anyways. So I answered a few questions. They ask you to upload any evidence that you have. So I just uploaded, I had a copy of my MRI report from the MRI that I had when my back was very bad.
Literally balls deep there.
I was MRI. Just like, here you go. Here's the report to say that I have a significant degeneration in the discs in my spine. There you go. There's some nice context phrase. But so I uploaded all of that. And then they ask you, are you able to stand in a queue for longer than, I think it's 10 minutes? I clicked no, because standing for longer than 10 minutes was very painful. And is still a bit painful. And then I can't remember what the other question they ask is. And then they ask you what parks you're going to attend. Now, I think also included in this is the likes of like your Six Flags. I'm pretty sure SeaWorld was on it. Disney wasn't, because obviously they do their own separate thing, but pretty much every other major theme park was on there.
Interesting. Yeah.
So you send all this off and then you get emailed a IBCCES card. And it'll say temporary on it. So I think I applied for mine on the 28th of August, if I remember correctly, or I got emailed on the 28th of August. And if it still says temporary, you kind of can't really do anything with it. And Universal kind of won't even talk to you. So the way the international body says is that once they approve you, they'll pass the details on to Universal and say, this person is planning to visit your park on these dates. You need to talk about what you need to talk to them about what accommodations they need.
Wow.
So I think it was maybe 2 working days later. It might have been a little bit longer. I then got an email to say that I had been approved. So I had my IBECC card and that'll last me for a year, I believe. I'll have to kind of reinstate, but you do put in the specific dates that you're visiting a park. So a couple of days after that, I got an email from Universal looking to arrange a time for them to call me and to discuss what accommodations I would need, what my assistance issues were and whatever. So they messaged me maybe like a week or so before I went. They asked for my phone number. They asked for times that would suit for them to call and then the dates that I was there. So I sent all this off and I never heard anything back. And it said in the email that you would hear from them up to 48 hours before your trip. And it got to, I think, like 3 days out from my trip and I emailed them and was just like, hello, I've still not heard anything. And I'm still yet to hear anything from them. They never rang me.
But, Universal.
Yeah. I can share some context that I got from a team member. So we arrived in on the Saturday. We didn't go into the parks or anything. On the Sunday morning, we decided to just head in for early park admission and then try figure out the assistance pass after a couple hours. And that was probably wise because you do have to go to guest relations up the front of the park. However, I was in bits by the time we got up to the front of the park from waiting in queues and stuff. So the longest queue I waited in probably the whole time I was in Universal was to speak to guest relations, which was great.
Yeah.
So I eventually got up to the front and spoke to a team member called Chelsea, who I did give a team member shout out for because she was fantastic. So because this is a brand new process and they haven't had to go through this third party, they haven't had to review evidence or anything like that before, there are 6 people working on this team allegedly, which is why there's quite the backlog of them getting round to talking to people. So that's why I never got a phone call.
Right. Yeah. Okay.
And it's also why there's so many people at guest relations looking to speak to them about this pass. So spoke to her, explained what the issue was and whatnot. She did again say that because mine was a physical issue, there are wheelchairs available and whatnot. But she said because there was just the two of us, and I think she could tell that we were both physically dying in the Orlando heat. She was like, I will grant you as an exception. She was like, if they ring and they give a different verdict, shall we say, they can cancel the pass.
Wow.
So that's just something to bear in mind because you get given a physical pass. And again, I don't mind putting photos up on the Instagram if people want to see what it looks like. So it's an actual physical pass. There's a number assigned to me. There's a barcode assigned to me. So if I had spoken to them and they were like, do you know what? We actually don't think you need this. We think you should just use a wheelchair. They could have canceled my pass in the middle of the trip, which they were fully entitled to do. But just something to bear in mind. The pass is only valid for 2 weeks at a time, which again, for me, was fine. But I imagine for like Orlando locals is a bit of a pain having to go up and sort it out every so often. But it is what it is. So basically on the pass, it's got the dates that it's valid for. It has my name, that we are a party of 2. And then they ask you if you can use stairs or if you can't use stairs. Now, what she did, I said I could do stairs. That was fine. Now, she did say if that changed at any point, there wouldn't be any questions. So the team members wouldn't necessarily automatically offer me the option without stairs. So, for example, in Gringotts, they wouldn't automatically send me the way without stairs. But if I needed it, I could ask for it at any point and there would be no questions. And I found that most team members just kind of sent us through the regular queue. But I know on the mummy, certainly one of the team members was like, are you okay to take the stairs? Would you like to take the lift instead? So it did kind of vary, but they do make it as accessible as possible. There was the 2 people that were ahead of us in the queue were next to us in the like lineup for guest relations. And they were there because he had just broken his leg and they were turned away. They were told no, because he was already in a wheelchair. They were like, you've already got a wheelchair. Just go through the wheelchair queues. So it does very much depend on who you get, I would imagine, how big your party size is, stuff like that. So we were quite lucky that we got Chelsea. She was great. So we got approved for the week. So the way it works, right, the Disney option is all digital. You don't have to go physically to the attraction, which is where Universal kind of differs.
Yeah.
So if the wait time is posted as 30 minutes or less, you just get automatically put through the express queue. Which
all right, okay, yeah.
Was great. And it's where I think Universal is a little bit better with Disney, because if you went up to, so I'll use Hagrid's for example, we went and got a return time for Hagrid's. We went up at 20 past nine. Our return time was 10 to 11 because it was 105 minute wait. Yeah. So that's quite a chunk. That's an hour and a half that we're obviously not just going to sit outside Hagrid's. No, you can go and you can rest and you can sit wherever you would like. Or we went and did Forbidden Journey. We did Flight of the Hippogriff. You could go on any other attractions that were 30 minutes or less, and you were just automatically sent through the express queue.
Oh, so you could sort of stack. So you've got that big one reserved,
yeah.
But you can go and do some below. Oh, that's good.
Yeah. So we were able to use it during Horror Nights as well. So, for example, I think the last Horror Nights one we got was for Stranger Things. Oh, so we arrived at 20 past eight. It was an 85 minute wait, and our return time was half nine. So again, over an hour of a wait. We went and grabbed a drink. We sat in Vamp 69 for a little bit. We ended up going into Finnegan's and getting some food. And then by the time we were done doing all of that, we could then go in through Stranger Things and automatically go through the express queue. But we could have went on, there were other days that we went on like The Mummy, or we just went and wandered through scare zones, stuff like that. Or if there was another house that was 30 minutes or less, which was rare, you could have just went straight through that.
So, it seems quite long-winded and laborious to actually get the pass, but the practicalities of once you've got it,
yeah,
it's quite straightforward, isn't it?
Yeah, it was like the queue to get it, like it's right out in front under the gates and whatnot. It's in the baking heat. Like, I nearly died in that queue. It was awful. But once we had it, and like we were there for a week, and most of my return times are from Horror Nights. I think the only two, maybe three times you had to get ride return times was one time for ET and then twice for Hagrid's. Everything else we could pretty much go straight on. Same with Horror Makeup Show. You just walk in, you show them your pass, and they just automatically let you in via the express queue, which means you're pretty much guaranteed the front row, depending on how many people are there. So it came more so in handy. More so we used the actual return time feature of it during Horror Nights, but we used it constantly for all of the rides. And it is quite nice that you can just go on a bunch of different things. So the only, I suppose, issue really that we found with it was that the first day we went to go do Hagrid's, it was down for pretty much the whole morning.
Wow.
So we went and did Velocicoaster. We went to go do Kong. Kong was also down. We did a couple other rides. And then eventually when Hagrid's did come back up, we were over, I think we just done Ripsaw Falls or something. We had to walk all the way over to Hagrid's to get a return time that was an hour and a half or even a little bit longer, and then go do other stuff.
And it had to be you. It couldn't be Adam with your pass.
No,
it
had to be me.
You had to go. So
now, to be fair, most of them couldn't understand my name or say my name at all, so they probably could have got away with it.
What did they call you?
Oh, Synod, a bunch of different things. Like, yeah, very rarely do people get my name right. But yeah, it had to be me that went over. So again, I had to walk from Toon Lagoon all the way over to Hogsmeade, get a return time, and then figure out what we were going to do for the hour. That one was actually just under 2 hours. So with Hagrid's anyways, because the express queue is generally about 15 minutes long, whatever the wait time is, they'll take 15 minutes off it, and that's how long your return time will be.
Wow.
It seems to depend on how long, I'd say on average, the express takes. But it was pretty much however long they think you'll spend in Express, they'll take that off the wait time, and that's what your return time will be.
I mean, it's still brilliant. The walking is troublesome. It's still maximum of six people, as is the Disney one, which is troublesome if you're a group of 10. What I find amazing with Universal is the kiddie swap. You all queue up with the kids, and then some of you, in some cases it would be four of them, an adult and the three kids would peel off into the family room. We'd all go and do the ride, and then we'd get off, go to the family room, and every single person who wanted to do the ride again would go and do it.
Amazing.
So, like, sometimes there would be seven of us going back out to go on the ride. Like, Hagrid's, for example, we did that twice in the first 20 minutes of being in the park, basically, because of kiddie swap. Some of us only did it once, but...
Fair.
So they do that side of it. Like, they're very relaxed about it. And, like, I might be whistleblowing and ruining it for everybody now. But, like, the wheelchair stuff... six, or the disability access, sorry, six maximum.
And to be fair, like, it was the actual, like, going and getting a return time. So at the Express queue, depending on the attraction, for Horror Nights anyways, there was always a team member standing scanning people's Express or signing off on people's assistance passes, and then there was always another team member that had clipboard that was basically calculating and writing out the return time. So if you were going to get a return time, you go to the team member with clipboard. It was the same for Hagrid's, but some of the other rides there wasn't quite the volume of people going up, so they didn't need necessarily to have two people doing that job. But you'd go up to the whoever has the clipboard, they would look at what time it is, look at the wait time. They have a grid basically that they're given, and you could see people being like, this is the wait time, this is what the return time should be. So it, like, there's no ambiguity to it. There's a strict, if the wait time is say 120 minutes, the person's got to wait at least an hour, stuff like that. And then when it came to going back, you'd again go back to the person with the clipboard. They would sign it off. You then go to the person that's scanning. They would, depending, it seemed to be, they would either scan, so there's a barcode on your assistance pass, they would scan it there, and then, much like I'm sure you experienced with Express, throughout the queue you might have people checking it. You are you do have Express, so like Hagrid's, because obviously it's quite a popular ride, halfway through the queue there's just a random team member to make sure that you've not just hopped from the standby queue into the Express queue. And so they won't scan it, but they will just read it and make sure it's the same people, it's the same name, stuff like that. It does say on it that you can be asked for ID. I was never asked for ID at all. I think because my name was a bit foreign looking to them. Once I could actually pronounce it, they were just like, oh yeah, that's fine. And then generally, again, much like with Express, once you get up to the front of the queue, they'll scan it as well. So you kind of need to keep it out and fairly handy. The annoying thing is it's slightly too big to fit in the lanyards.
Yeah, and you don't want to get it wet.
Yeah, which I definitely did. Mine got soaked on Rips Off Holds. So bear that in mind. And there was no way of me not bringing it on Rips Off Holds, because I had to use it throughout the queue. So that's the only slight negative about it, is that, like, I bought a lanyard with full intentions of just using it for that, but because you have to take it in and out because people have to be able to ride on it.
Yeah.
Like, it didn't really fit in the pouch. But I think there's pros and cons to both ways that Disney and Universal do it. Hopefully Universal can get this streamlined so that you can maybe have it approved ahead of time. Either way, you would still have to go to guest relations and physically get the card. I don't think there's any way of them, or it's certainly nothing that I've seen online, I mean, alluded to you being able to collect it at your hotel or anything like that. That would be amazing. But I think either way, you'd still have to go to guest relations to physically pick it up. But once we had it, it was a doddle. And I think if you fill the full pass up, you probably have to go back and get a fresh one.
Oh, nice. So if you hadn't have been pre-approved internationally by going on that website,
I don't think they'd talk to you.
If you just turned up on the day, like, naive.
Yeah. I don't think there's anything they'd be able to do for you, to be honest. Because even so, I got emailed my IBCCE card or whatever it is. I had that emailed and I had it saved on my phone. I had it saved in the files on my phone. And I showed her that, and even that wasn't valid. I had to pull it up on the actual website, the live version of it, so she can make sure that it wasn't
a screenshot.
Fully legit. There was no, there was no tampering done or anything like that. So that's a thing to bear in mind, is that you definitely have to do this ahead of time. Again, I did it maybe a week and a half out from the trip. I wouldn't necessarily leave it much closer than that, just to be on the safe side. But once you've filled it in, it's valid for a year.
Yeah.
And then I think you just have to go in and update it or refresh it or whatever it is. And it is a relatively new process, like them, you needing this approval from this international body. But I think before that, you could just kind of rock up and probably do it the same as you would in Disney in person. But now you have to have the approval from this system.
Well, I mean, all this is unbelievable information, to be fair, because, you know, we didn't need it because obviously we had express passes anyway.
Yeah.
But anybody who's out there who's going to Florida who just thinks it's going to be similar to DAS, you know, you've got to do your own work and you've got to have evidence. You know, that's the big one.
Yeah.
So you might not need your MRI scan and your blood samples and all this, but you might just definitely need a letter off your doctor telling whoever what the condition is.
And one thing I would say, like, as I said, we mainly use the return time aspect of it for horror nights. So one of the days we did Stay and Scream and we went to The Last of Us. And I know you were saying with Disney, you kind of have to wait for wait times to generate before you can book anything to do with DAS. But with this, we got up to the front and they were like, we don't know what the wait time is. Just go through Express. So we didn't even have to get a return time for The Last of Us. They just automatically sent us through. But what I will say for horror nights, especially most of the attraction queues, you didn't have to wait more than 15 minutes once you went through the express queue.
Yeah.
The Horror Nights Express is a good bit longer. So I think Chucky was probably the longest we waited. We waited probably close to 40 minutes in the express queue. So that wasn't great. But especially if you're someone that is not good with being around large volumes of people and having to wait in queues with massive amounts of people, just bear that in mind if you're planning to use it for Horror Nights, because the queues for Express and the queues for Standby are right beside each other, and the queues for Standby might be 4 or 5 rows deep. It's a lot. And like, I wouldn't be a claustrophobic person necessarily, but like, it was giving me the heebie-jeebies being around that many people. So just bear that in mind. You are probably, I think the quickest we waited in Express was maybe 10-15 minutes for a house, but it was usually close enough to the half an hour mark. So just mentally prepare yourself for that, if that will be an issue that you probably still will have to spend time queuing with a lot of people.
A lot. As Cilla Black used to say.
A lot of people.
Because it is, isn't it? And it's like intense. Snake, up and down, up and down, up and down. And you see people playing Uno. You see people having packed lunches.
Yeah.
People are playing that Disney head game, Heads Up, and stuff like that.
Did see was a lot of people with like big over-the-head headphones on, watching stuff on their phone.
Yeah.
That I imagine were just trying to zone out everyone else that was around them.
Yeah, keep themselves.
So that could be an option. Maybe bring some headphones so you can just kind of try and block out everything else that's going around. But whilst you're waiting for your return time, especially at Horror Nights, like, just grab a drink and sit and watch people get scared in the scary zone. It's great crack.
Yeah, and I mean, we may as well have you on the universe at a Halloween After Dark show as well, and get you on there and deep dive, because you've done it, you've kicked ass. But before we end this show, right, we've got to tell people about Walmart and the drugs.
Oh my God. So.
Oh my God.
It's so, because as I said, I've had a herniated disc in my back, I've been going through painkillers because I am allergic to codeine. I'm just giving out a lot of personal information here. But I'm allergic to codeine, which means I can't really be prescribed the good stuff when it comes to painkillers. I'm kind of just reliant on paracetamol for the most part. And I cannot tell you how many packets, the little packets of paracetamol I've gone through in the last 2 months. So we were placing a Walmart order, mainly because another thing to do with my back is that I have found that I was prescribed lidocaine patches, which is kind of like antiseptic the only thing that's coming to my mind? Oh, I can't think of the proper word. Lidocaine. It's the stuff that like numbs you, basically. It's like a sensation. So they're like giant plasters, and I would put them on the base of my spine, and I found that they would help.
Yeah.
Buying them in Ireland, incredibly expensive. I got prescribed 2 weeks worth, and it cost me like €70.
Jeez.
Whereas a pack of three in Walmart was like £4.
Oh.
So I already was planning on doing a Walmart order so that I could get some lidocaine patches to have. And they're also great just if your muscles are sore as well. Adam's feet were really at them and stuck some lidocaines on. They were great. But whilst we were looking at that stuff, we had a look at
just numb the pain. Yeah.
There you go. Whilst we were looking at that, we looked at painkillers and we got 1,000 painkillers for, I think it was $18.
Yeah. I mean,
and they're massive. They're absolutely massive. And just got them delivered to Cabana Bay and there was no issues.
I have to go and beg my doctor for an Proxen, and he'll give me 2 weeks supply. And it's like two tablets a day or whatever.
Yeah.
And it's like our prescription, that'll cost me a tenner prescription.
Yeah.
We're in the Walmart and there's bottles and bottles of them with like 800 naproxen.
It's for wild.
Like you say, $18.
It's and crazy.
I did buy some drugs. I didn't buy the naproxen, but I might have done. I can't remember. But I've got them there. I haven't had them yet because I've been all right. I'm just, as the weather's turning now, everything's starting to hurt. So I'll be on them. Yeah. But if anyone's in America now wants to bring me a bottle of drugs back, I kind of want to get them patches and just put them all over my body and see what happens.
They're pretty helpful. It is weird though, because it does make your skin completely numb. So you leave them on for about 12 hours and then your skin is completely numb after. So it is a bit weird, but if you use them kind of consistently, I find they don't really help after a while. But every so often, if my back's really at me, little lidocaine patch definitely makes a difference.
I mean, right, again, medical history time. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to get better. My arthritis is not going to get better. Are you going to get better, or have you got this for life as well?
I mean, it's something I'm going to have to be mindful of for the rest of my life.
Oh.
Yeah.
We can wheel each other around in about 10 years, can't we? Well, scooters around.
There you go.
Yeah. So, right. Well, thank you very much, Sinead.
No problems.
Absolutely. These two episodes are going to go down in history as the biggest episodes that we've ever done.
There you go. I hope the universal one helps people, because, again, I really struggled to find information about it. And no one, I could ask, I don't know how many people in the group, about anything to do with Disney and Universal, and they'd have answers. No one could tell me about this.
Oh, it's hidden. Yeah. It's a hidden little thing. I mean, imagine rocking. I mean, what are you doing, right? You've just broke your leg. What are you doing going to a theme park? You just say, I won't go on this holiday.
Yeah.
The amount of people we see in getting wheeled around with broken legs.
But that's the thing. Like, there was a point in time where I was like, should we cancel the trip? Should we postpone it or anything like that? But the fact that I was able to get the DAS pass and this meant that it just kind of took some of that worry away, that I'd be able to do a little bit, probably not as much as I would have done on a normal trip, but I was still able to do things. Because it's one thing if you live in America and you're just like, oh, I'll put it off for a little while. It's different when you're trying to move international flights and stuff like that. Yeah,
definitely.
Definitely made a massive difference for us.
Yeah, I mean, and share your stories with us. Drop us an email if mm-hmm. this episode's helped you and what your experiences were, stuff like that. And it's all about helping, isn't it? Just helping other people. Big hug around the world. Right, cheers, girl. Let's end this episode. See if I can end it as abruptly as I did this after dark.
Nice.
This podcast is part of the After Dark Podcast Network.